show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a baseball prospectus affiliate. Mike, it was the best of times. It was the worst of times. Charles Dickens wrote that about, as the opening line for A Tale of Two Cities. You could use that to describe the current Royals baseball team. A tale of two teams, if you will. There's the team that started 12-6 and won 15 of 20. And there's also the team that sandwiched those outside of a 3-11 stretch and are currently mired in a 6-game losing streak. So who knows what the real team is? We'll figure it out by the end of the year. But before we kind of dive into the recent happenings, of course, the introductions, as always. How was that for an opening, though? I kind of like that.
It was the epic of belief. I should know the intro to that book.
Yes. That's the only one I know, just because it's so famous. But
sure.
I think I tried to read that book once in grade school because I was like, oh, I want to read that famous book.
And then
I read
that.
Like, yeah, and then I read like that first page. And then I was like, I think that covers it.
Yeah, what is this guy talking about?
I think I tried to read Gone with the Wind too, and I was like, fuck this.
Oh my God.
Well, because Gone with the Wind, I was really into movies when I was in grade school. And so I was like, okay. Oh, you know, movies, Gone with the Wind. And then, like, I had read Great Expectations, and I was like, oh, cool, I can read Charles Dickens, and but, you know, whatever. Little ambitious Jeff was a little too ambitious.
How long of a movie is Gone with the Wind?
Like 3 hours and 40 minutes. It's absurd.
Wow. Yeah, the book is like...
It's like 900 pages.
It's a cinder block. It's huge.
It's like The Stand, but about the Civil War. So, anyway, I guess we kind of skipped the introduction part, but I'm Jeff Furrier, your host, of course, with me, the ever incomparable Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this somewhat somber evening in terms of Royals talk?
Oh my gosh, I feel like just turned around in the last week. It's just amazing to see a team that we were like amped up to talk about last week, and this week it's kind of like, it's been a really bad week for Royals baseball, and we still have to talk about it.
And, you know, it's funny because I don't know that they've won since that last episode.
Nope, they lost that night because I remember turning the game back on, and that's when things fell apart. So I guess it's my fault.
I guess it's our fault there.
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to do? You win some, you lose some. Or in the Royals' case, you lose six.
Right.
And... I mean, there's quite a bit of a run differential for those six games, wasn't there?
Yeah, you could say, you know, that's kind of been at least one part of this is that the Royals have not scored hardly at all. They scored four runs on the first game of this losing stretch, but they've scored one run in four of the next five. So, four runs over a 5-game stretch, and it's just like, obviously that's not going to do it, but if you're ever going to get anything, you've got to get pitching, and the Royals haven't gotten pitching either. They gave up 5 runs, then 6, then 7, then 7, then 4, so they had a shot in that one, and then last night they gave up 9, and the whole time, if you're only scoring one run, you're not even going to come close, and they haven't. It's pretty much game over by the middle of the game, and I think at least twice they've gone through and put Drew Butera at first base, and Tony Cruz caught a couple of games because they wanted to get their starters out, because it was like, well, They're not going to make up that 6 runs or that 8 runs or whatever. And it's just like, that's awful. When it starts to look like a spring training game, that's a bad sign for a week in June.
Yeah, you know, I think they have somebody like an 0.95 batting average with runners in scoring position in the stretch. I mean,
they're 4 for 42 with runners in scoring position. Yeah, that's
yep. So I mean, every single way you can be bad, the Royals are being bad. They're not getting the hitting like you said. They're not getting the pitching. They're making some uncharacteristic blunders in defense. You know, not super common, but I mean, especially with. You could make the argument that this whole thing started. It all fell apart. So if we harken back to 2014 in the World Series, there are people that you can say kind of the turning point was when Jason Vargas hitting in San Francisco thought he had the walk, started trotting down to first. They got called back. The Royals were up 4-1, I think, at that point. He struck out. Turned around, gave up a bunch of runs the next inning. They end up losing 11-4, and we all know what happened there. So yep. Not that that's in any way similar in terms of what happened to the Omar Infante incident, but the fact that you can kind of almost pinpoint, like, Omar Infante has a double play that could have gotten them out of a sticky inning in Chicago and
– In Cleveland.
Or, I'm sorry, Cleveland. Yeah. Cleveland. Chicago was right before that, but in Cleveland. Yeah. And – he biffs the throw. Like, it just, it looked like there was absolutely nothing there. Like, it looked like his arm was just meat on a hook, and he was trying to, like, contort his body fast enough so that his arm could get enough movement. I mean, there was just nothing on that throw, and then he jerked it, and it just goes nowhere.
Yep, sailed wide and everything.
A bunt scored, and then next thing you know, game's tied. Next thing you know, Cleveland walks off with the win, and it's the team just felt dejected because that's the type of game the Royals win. It's not the type of game that the Royals lose. And then they haven't won since. They got swept by Cleveland. That was the game they scored the 4 runs. They've given up, you know, they give up 7 in all 3 games after that, at least.
It was 6-7-7.
6-7. Okay. So yeah, almost.
Basically, but, yeah.
I mean, they've been atrocious. And you. You know, that's why you talk about an ace pitcher being so important and why kind of it is kind of crazy how well the Royals were able to do last year without one, a true ace. But just having that pitcher that can come in and stop the bleeding in a situation like that, you know, the White Sox have it with Chris Sale, and you can come in and say, okay, even, you know, we've been getting blasted, we're going to lose, but you know, this guy's only going to give up 1 run or so in 7 innings, and we're going to have a chance to win this game and to stop this streak. And they haven't had that. When you don't have that, bad things happen, like a 6-game losing streak. All of it coming to an apex with last night, if you will. Royals lost 9-1 to Orioles, to the Orioles, as they were essentially throwing out some batting practice. But the main kind of point that everyone's been talking about, from local sports talk all the way to national pundits, the Yordano Ventura, the man who we've talked about, and we've kind of alluded to it. We've mentioned it a few times in the show. How goes Yordano Ventura, so goes the Royals this year. It seemed even more so than last, because there was so much dependent on Yordano taking that next step and being that guy. And I think the Royals were kind of hoping, and not only hoping, but planning a little bit on that happening. And it hasn't happened so far. He was having a not very good game last night. And then he had an incident where he was – apparently the plan against Manny Machado was to throw inside – on him, back him off the plate a little bit. And, you know, against the Orioles, it's kind of the book on the whole Orioles as a team, their whole lineup, especially in Camden Yards, where that park, I mean, it's a sandbox out there, so they can, you know, they hit a lot of home runs there, so you got to try and control that. It seemed like a valid strategy. Ventura got a little closer than Machado would have liked. Machado started jawing at him. They had words, whatever. Ventura, at some point, somewhere, lost his cool. He wasn't trying to pitch inside to Machado the next time he came up. I mean, maybe he was, but he intentionally hit him. There's no bones about that.
Right.
And then he took the defensive stance immediately after he hit him. And Machado throws his helmet, charges the mound. They get into fisticuffs. Machado lands a punch. Ventura gets a solid takedown. And then the teams come in and pull him away. And now it's a question of what to do with Yordano Ventura. I mean, I know what MLB is going to do, and they're probably going to suspend him for at least 10 games coming up here. So he's going to miss a couple starts, which the way he's pitching isn't a bad thing at this point.
May not be, yeah.
Machado will probably get a small suspension as well. But, I mean, after all this, and there's been talk of how Ventura has lost the locker room in the sense that nobody really likes him. They're tired of his crap. And, you know, they would rather see him put up and shut up. And so it's just kind of a, what do the Royals do with this guy who we've seen, you know, peak Ventura 2014 World Series game 6. We've seen that level of talent, and that wasn't an aberration. That was, you know, that's where he can be. But ever since then, it's been one of those roller coaster rides. So, I mean, what do you make of Ventura at this point, Mike?
Well, he's 25. So on one hand, he's still young, but at the same time, he should know better than to, you know, lose his cool and you know, start these incidents. You know, last year, I think that a lot of things got overblown because he seemed to be at the center of a lot of these things. And on one hand, I think it was just kind of happenstance. You know, it happened that the day after the Brett Lowry game, he was the starter. And baseball's unwritten rules, you know, Lowry was going to get his. And Ventura gave up a home run and then hit Lowry on the next pitch. And it's like, you know, that kind of works out perfectly for him. Not to say that it's justified or right. I think it's really stupid to have to, oh, you got to police the guys like that. But, you know, circumstance being what it is, you know, Lowry was going to get hit by somebody. He was going to get beaten by somebody in that series. And then later in that White Sox series, you know, Adam Eaton hits something and starts yelling at Ventura as he's going to first base. Ventura throws him out, yells something back, and then there's a fight. And so, you know, I don't know if those are necessarily caused by Ventura, but certainly allowed to escalate. Yeah. Like, but last night was like, it was just stupid. It served no purpose. You know, you've got a guy who is one of the probably five best players in baseball pretty easily. He's, you know, just he hit a home run the other night. You know, he's hit well the whole series. And you get him out. You know, that first at bat, he got him out. He got him, you know, backed him off the plate, gotten out from him. At that stage, your job is just to go get him out again. And for some reason, Ventura decided to take it personally and ends up, you know, throwing 99 miles per hour into his ribs. And, you know, there's obviously a fight. And I think everybody kind of felt like, you know, if he threw at him, this was going to happen. And so, you know, it really calls into question what kind of, you know, decision making he's doing out there. And, you know, he's probably frustrated because he has not pitched well, but that doesn't give him any excuse to go throw at a guy. On the same hand, you know, or on the other hand, same hand, other hand. Anyway, Machado's not absolved from anything either because, you know, you don't have to charge the mound. Going back to that Lowry incident, I don't like Brett Lowry, but he took his base quietly. He just went, got Bean, took it. And, you know, he didn't charge the mound or anything, even though I think people would have expected him to. Machado, he did. And, you know, they're both going to get some kind of punishment from the league, fines, suspensions. And, you know, what that means for Ventura, I don't know. I mean, he's struggled. He's been really struggling with his fastball all season. He either can't locate it or it's right down the middle. He's getting hammered. He's walking guys. He's not missing bats. So there's a lot going wrong, and I don't know what you do. I don't know if he needs some kind of a wake-up call in the real trip to Omaha this time, or if they need to send him to the bullpen and maybe, you know, have it so that he knows that any given day he could be in a game. You know, that way, you know, he doesn't have a bunch of days to just kind of stew over anything. You know, whatever his last performance was, you know, give him that opportunity for a short memory. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do with him. And I, you know, it seems like those are kind of the options. They kind of, it seems like they need to do something to at least show them that, hey, you've got to perform better and you've got to behave better. You can't keep doing these kind of things that put you in this really negative light, especially if you're not pitching well. You know, it wouldn't be right if he was, you know, Sandy Koufax out there, but, you know, at least if you're putting the numbers up, there's, you know, some level of swagger that some people will give you some leeway with. But if you're not performing, you know, you can't be that kind of a distraction to the team. And you can't put them in a position now where if someone has to cover those starts, that's depth. That's possibly the bullpen being overused. You know, it has repercussions for the rest of the team. And I think that's, you know, why if there is any kind of, you know, I guess impatience with it, that's why, because they've got to pay the price just the same as he did, even though it was his bonehead decision in the first place to throw at Machado instead of just try to get him out.
Yeah. And, you know, to that point that you were making about, you know, if he was pitching better, I mean, you know, look at Manny Machado. This is not his first incident. And no. The majority of the rhetoric from a national perspective was flowing towards Ventura, you know, and not necessarily uncalled for, given the fact that, you know, Ventura did start it and Ventura did let a situation that probably could have blown over escalate into something that turned into this. But you look at Machado, and he's had multiple suspensions before. He's got a reputation as a hothead, but he had 35 home runs last year. He's having an MVP caliber season this year, and he's one of the best players in baseball, as you noted. So it's a little bit easier to – and, you know, it harkens back to one of Herm Edwards' adages when he was coach of the Chiefs. See, I heard – I don't think I ever heard him say this, but I heard players say it after he – retired from coaching, that he would always tell players that, you know, I'll be fair but not equal. So, you know, the better player you are, the more of a star you are, if you will, you know, you're going to get exceptions because that's just the way the business works. And so if Ventura was pitching better, you know, it'd be easier to put up with this. People probably wouldn't care as much. But if you're going to go out there, like you said, Mike, and just lay an egg and then start all this, you know, kerfuffle, then it's just a no-go. It's something that needs to be stopped. And I'm not really sure what the answer is either. I know what I would do, and I would probably send him to the minor leagues. I think you get, you know, a couple things. You send a message, number one, obviously. You take him out of the pressure atmosphere right now, because this season had more pressure than even last season did, really, because, you know, as the world champion, you know, okay, it's impossible to do better than we did last year. I mean, theoretically, you could win more games and win the World Series. I guess that would technically be better. But, you know, from a typical standpoint, there's no way you're going to be better than winning. The only thing you can do is match what you did last season, mm-hmm. you know, from a team standpoint. So the team had a lot of pressure. And, you know, Yordano Ventura saw last year with the added pressure of that season that sometimes he has a tough time dealing with it. And so I think if you can remove him from that scenario, allow him to work on things. And one of the more interesting things I read today, you know, there were a lot of the sweet, sweet internet takes on. toasty and warm.
Oh, gosh.
Straight from the Subway toasting machine.
Yes.
There were a lot of them. But one of the more reasoned approaches I saw to the situation was a article I read by Ken Rosenthal. Did you read that one?
Yep.
Yeah, which I thought was really good. And why I thought it was good was because he mentioned how he talked to Royals coaches and people in the front office. And the thing that had them kind of flummoxed, if you will, was that they, you know, if you ask any of them, apparently he's a perilous worker. He watches film. He looks great in his side sessions. He looks great when he's out throwing. You know, he his mechanics look good. His pitches look good. But then he gets on the mound, something happens, and his mechanics aren't the same. He's not consistent with his delivery. He just looks poor. And then the results, you know, we've seen them. They're not good. And he mentioned specifically a kind of leg kick finisher that he was doing the other night that he even asked specifically about, and they said they specifically tell him not to do that, and they specifically don't want him to use to have that in his rotate or in his mechanics. And when he gets on the mound, there's nothing they can do once he's out there. It's just him, and he does it, and they're not really sure what it is. So I think, you know, that if that's the scenario, and you've got all this pressure, and then you've got all this that he's possibly being lost in the locker room, you know, send him away, let the team get used to the idea of him not being there, knowing they all know he would come back. He's too talented not to.
Mm-hmm.
Let him get used to the idea of not being there. Maybe get humbled a little bit. I don't know. And then maybe it doesn't seem like he needs to renew a work ethic, but just be able to translate it better to on the field. And then if he can make all that work, then maybe, you know, when he comes back, kind of like a, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder, if you will. So the team, maybe they'll be a little bit more open to him if they're not right now, which by most accounts, by people that would know, they are not very open to him right now. And there was kind of a very telling shot on TV last night of him after the incident sitting in the dugout and
just kind of by himself,
players not really going near him, not really trying to talk. You know, sometimes you get players like, hey, man, it's cool. We got your back. We'll get him next time. And they had his back when the fight was happening and it was going on. But, you know, after that, it was just kind of like, hey, man, we're tired of this. You're on your own. So, I mean, that's what I would do. I would think I would send him to the minors. The biggest problem at that point is, who do you have to replace him?
Yeah. At this stage, I guess it would be Dylan G, but you're also at the kind of point where you've got Chris Young in the back of that rotation. So you've got to basically roll with Ian Kennedy, Edinson Volquez, Danny Duffy, who's, you know, Duffy's looked good, but there have been some outings where he's struggled at the end. And I don't know if that's just he's got to continue to get up to speed as a starter and under a starter's workload and preparation. But Chris Young has, you know, he's given up like an historic amount of home runs. Just it's not effective for the most part. And, you know, that can be really volatile. You know, that's one of the things that the Royals really needed was some stability out of their rotation. And they haven't gotten it. You know, Duffy's kind of stepped up to be a little bit of what we thought Ventura might be. You know, he's throwing, you know, striking guys out. He's being very pitch efficient. He's not walking guys, which is surprising because it's Danny Duffy, and all of that applies to him right now as a starter. And so he's kind of filling in that same spot while Ventura is struggling or really fighting through. Like, I think last week he got six innings and only gave up two runs. You know, but it took him a lot of effort to get through that. I think he had two 30-pitch innings during that game. And still, really, you know, it's not like he was striking guys out. It was just, you know, people fouling things off, a lot of base runners, high-stress innings, things like that. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure what they're going to do with him. I kind of think he would respond to something like a trip to Omaha. You know, we saw last year just getting the actual procedure to be optioned. You know, it seemed after that he was pitching a lot better. And I don't know if that's a causation that, hey, they're willing to option me down to the minors, so I better get this in gear, or if it's just coincidence. I don't know. I mean, we know that he wasn't even optioned for more than 24 hours because the same day, Jason Vargas blew out his elbow for good, or at least for, you know, the rest of the season. And so,
and it's even very possible that the Royals knew it would only be a day, and that's why they did it, because they knew what the situation was going to be with Vargas. So
maybe, yeah.
Maybe they never even had an intention to do that.
Yeah, but at any rate, you know, they were prepared to send him to Omaha, and that could be the same thing this time. And if it's something where he gets 2 weeks in Omaha and makes three or four starts and kind of gets the fastball command back and feels more comfortable and irons out all the little things they want him to do mechanically, then maybe he does come back and regains it. And now you've got four guys in that rotation you feel good about, and you can kind of make do with Chris Young being good every other time, or Dylan G if he's sticking around, and you move, you know, Young into the bullpen or whatnot. I mean, that's probably the most likely thing, but I don't know. They may just stick with him in the rotation and just hope that, you know, that kind of faith in him works. But, you know, I don't know, you know, if that's something that's going to be effective, or if it's going to be something that just tells him, hey, you know, it doesn't matter. I'm just going to go out there and every fifth day I'm going to throw, and here we go. And, you know, maybe nothing really improves from that point. I don't know. I mean, it's a really weird decision.
Yeah, it's strange because the Royals are – they've been – for all their inconsistencies they've had over the last 10 years, the one thing that they've been really consistent with, and that has been a big factor in their winning, has been the kind of locker room atmosphere presence that they want their players to have. And they want everyone to fit. They want everyone to fit together. And – not to say that, you know, Yordano Ventura doesn't necessarily fit, but he always seemed a little odd compared to the rest of them, you know, a little bit like the odd man out. And so, you know, when they were winning and he was doing, you know, especially in 2014 when he was doing really well, and then last year after he kind of figured out his issues and started, you know, it's not a huge deal. You go out and you do your thing and everyone's happy. But when they're minor, so it seems kind of weird that the Royals are in this predicament. And I heard on the radio today when I went to lunch, it was Sarin Petro's show, and he kind of brought up the point, this organization has made it kind of their MO to stick with players, right? You go back to Eric Hosmer, who's had his issues, Mike Moustakas, who had his big ones, even though he was sent down in 2014. But, you know, even you can go back to, you know, Zach Greinke, definitely Alex Gordon. And, you know, there's Danny Duffy as well. And, you know, each and every time it's paid dividends. So, you know, you can't really fault them for sticking with them, because sometimes you have to do that to players. Not every player develops immediately. Not every player's, you know, Mike Trout or Bryce Harper or whatever. But, and they've kind of done that with Yordano Ventura. And this is, at least to this point, seems like the only one that hasn't really worked so far. And if for no other reason than, not only has it not paid off, but it seems to be getting worse. And Petro brought up the point of, you know, well, if the Royals would have identified this kind of personality issue, then maybe they should have traded him sooner. Maybe they should have traded him a year ago or something, or somehow found a way to get him. But they didn't. You know, they were kind of tantalized by the talent, by that game six in 2014, and they signed him to the extension, and they told him he was going to be the ace, and, you know, and everything kind of welled up, and there was all this anticipation, and he's just kind of fell flat ever since. And it's just, I mean, it's weird. I don't know what to do. I'm not sure what the Royals know what to do.
They would have to be just certain that, okay, this guy is going to be, you know, some kind of a bust, or he's not going to perform, or something's going to push him away from that path to success before they would have to do that. They'd have to just know it. And I don't know if you can just easily know that. You know, I think when they send him down last year and he comes back and pitches well in the second half and pitches decently well in the playoffs, that's where you start to think, well, okay, we were right to stick with him. You know, we must have made the right decision. He's going to be fine now. And you enter this year thinking, you know, because if they were going to trade him, after last year would have been the time to do it. You know, you've got him on a pretty team-friendly deal. You can sell that to a team that might want him. He just came off of a good second half and some playoff performances. You know, you can sell that. And, you know, he's just entering some of his peak years. You can sell that. So he would have some value at that stage. But if he's performing well enough to have that kind of value, why would they want to get rid of him? You know, they'd be wanting to acquire a player like that. So it's, you know, it makes it difficult. So, you know, there were some differing rumors and reports out there that either the Royals have shopped him around, or at least have let his name come up in trade talks, or that that's ludicrous. There's no way they're doing that. You know, I'm sure they would listen. I'm sure if somebody asked, they would at least entertain some kind of an offer. But right now, it's as low a value as you can get. I mean, you've got a guy who's not pitching well, who seems to be losing his focus, at least, or if nothing else, something is bothering him. I don't want to play, you know, armchair psychologist. I dislike when that happens, you know, but something's not working, and it's either mechanical or it's, you know, his focus and attention, or it's both, or it's, you know, I don't know.
Well, I don't think it's unreasonable to kind of make a claim like that when you read a story like what we were talking about with the Rosenthal story, where, you know, direct accounts from people in the Royals organization are saying that it's, you know, his inconsistency between when he practices and when he's out on the mound. And that suggests some sort of, you know, inability to focus, inability to properly, you know, maybe he can physically prepare all he wants, but the mental preparation isn't there. And, you know, it seems, again, it's another one of those odd things, because the Royals have the last couple of years, their mental strength, for however much, you know, however much stock you want to put in something like that, they're mentally prepared. They're mentally ready for every situation. They're, you know, Hosmer, when he made that mad dash in game five, you know, he knew that was what he was going to do. They were prepared for it. They scouted for it. You know, same deal with a lot of those great things that have happened have been because they were so prepared, so mentally ready for that situation to occur. So it just seems odd that you would have someone like Ventura, who he doesn't seem mentally prepared to be the pitcher that the Royals need him to be. I don't know how legitimate that is. It's kind of just what it seems. Doesn't seem unreasonable at this point to suggest that, but then I don't know how you fix it either. Just like you were saying, it's just this, man, it's an unfortunately depressing situation.
Yeah. And like, you see all this talent and you think he put it together in 2014 and looked good, and he did it for the last 2 months of the season last year, or at least regular season. You would think he could get that again, but you know, early on, control wasn't there. It's never really been there. Command hasn't been there. It just makes it really difficult to figure out what's going on and how they fix it. And that's going to be a really important question, because if they don't get him back as the guy they expect, you're down to like two starting pitchers, you know, that you can rely on, and maybe Duffy continues to give you good outings. That's where they're at. And if they don't have, you know, reasonable starting pitching, we've seen how difficult it is. You know, if you're down 5-0 after four innings, you know, the Royals don't have the kind of offense to always make that up. It's not like the Red Sox or Blue Jays or Orioles, where, you know, you get four batters up and somehow they've managed to get a walk, a hit, a home run, and then another home run while the pitcher's trying to regain his bearings. You know, the Royals don't do that. The Royals, they might get those four guys up and you might get one run because you've got single, move him over, you know, another, maybe a walk and then another single. And that's how they get their run over. And, you know, it's a way different team than some of those guys that can just kind of turn it on, and just all of a sudden put up runs. And so if you're down early and you've only got, you know, two pitchers who can usually prevent you from going down early, you know, that's going to be difficult. It's going to be tough all year. And the Royals don't exactly have the kind of upside arms in their farm system right now that can step in to do that. I mean, ideally you'd have Kyle Zimmer or Miguel Almonte ready, but neither of them have really pitched this year. They both have shoulder fatigue. I mean, you know, they're in a really tough spot, and I don't know if that means they've got to go out and find another pitcher from a struggling team that knows they're not going to be in it this year. Twins, Braves, you know, whomever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. It's tough, because if you don't have Ventura, you know, one, I guess, you know, maybe you're missing a guy who's got a 5 ERA, but you know the talent. And you know that if he gets it going, he can go on a 2-month stretch where he can be really good. And if something's in the way of that, mechanically, mentally, whatever, you know, what do you do? I don't know. And you know, it's not going to do a ton of good if he spends a month in Omaha, if he can ride it in Kansas City. But if he needs that month in Omaha, then, you know, I guess they'll have to do it. And maybe, you know, long term, maybe that's what's best for him, to give him a chance to really get it all back, really focus on it, really get the routine and everything. And then, you know, maybe the Royals struggle all season, you know, but next year you've got Ventura and he's actually the guy you figure he is, because he had that opportunity to get, you know, whatever you want to call it, wake up call, a refocus, whatever, you know, maybe that works out for the best, but I don't know. I mean, that's the difficult decision the Royals have. And I don't know if there's any one that is, you know, slam dunk, or ideal, and I'm sure they feel pretty similar.
Yeah. You know, they had, talking about the possibility of him going on a run, I mean, he had a stretch last year after he came back quote unquote from his jaunt
right
to Omaha, and
may not have even packed a bag. I don't know.
Yeah. From August going into September, where the Royals, he didn't get a decision for each of these games, but the Royals won 8 out of the 9 games that he pitched in. He pitched 54 innings, had 64 strikeouts and a 2.83 ERA in that time. So, I mean, he can go on those runs, like you mentioned. We've seen it. It's there. It's just a matter of, you know, what does he need to get back to that point? And since we talked about, we don't know. And the worst part is the Royals may not know. And that's why they're kind of trying. They might use this kind of suspension to buy themselves some time to figure out, what do we need to do with this guy? Do we need to put him in the bullpen? Do we need to send him to Omaha? Who knows? But I think we've exhausted the Ventura opinions for the evening. And you kind of mentioned the discussion of, you know, if they were to trade him, you know, getting somebody back, and that can, we can kind of look at, not necessarily from a trade Yordan Ventura perspective, but just a, you know, if the Royals need something right now, they need some help. Moose isn't coming back for the rest of the season. Gordon's probably at least another 3 weeks away, if not longer. You know, Perez is, I don't know that he's 100%, but he's kind of back, and, you know, I think he'll be at 100% soon. Yeah, I don't know what he's, Brett Eibner.
Go ahead. I was going to say that, you know, Perez is good enough that they sent the third catcher back at least. So there is that, but he's still going to catch every day, and there still could be, you know, the opportunity where, hey, he wears down because he's a big catcher, and you wear down if you play him every day. It's just
absolutely
what happens.
And, you know, people are wanting to put a lot of, oh, Brett Eibner will come back and be the shot in the arm this offense needs. And that's not who Brett Eibner is, folks. So there's no need to get your hopes up he's the final missing piece. Because if that's who he was, he would have been in a Royals uniform a long time ago. And he wasn't. Yeah. So
there's no, you know, Alex Rios signing if he was that guy.
Yeah, I mean, he might have a few good games again, but, you know, he's not the guy that's going to turn the whole thing around. So, I mean, you mentioned Zimmer and Almonte and how they've been non-existent this year. And I do get the feeling that the Royals went in knowing they might have some holes in the rotation, thinking that one of those two or both would be ready to come up and assume that role. And that has also not gone to plan for them this year. So, I mean, where do you see the help coming from? They need something. Where are they going to get it?
I don't know.
That about sums it up. Right,
I just don't know. I mean, they've got some arms in the minors, but I just don't know. I mean, there's, you know, the last year they got Johnny Cueto and they got Ben Zobrist for a lot of near ready arms. John Lamb, Brandon Finnegan, Sean Manaea, even Aaron Brooks, Cody Reed, he's knocking on the door now. Those are guys who could help this team right now in this kind of situation. But, you know, flags fly forever. So I don't regret in any way making those trades, but you do see that what the price ends up being when you've got some injuries, some struggles with your big league team, and now you don't have that group. I mean, that's five guys. They might not all be great. Manaea's been hot and cold. Lamb's been okay. Finnegan started out really well, then struggled, and I think his last start he was pretty good. Brooks has not really done anything. Cody Reed is still in the minors. You know, any of those three who have reached the big leagues could help, but I don't think there are any guys that you would look at and say, well, you're our anchor now. You're our number two starter behind Volquez or Kennedy. You know, they wouldn't rely on that kind of thing from them, but they would certainly help to have them around. Mm-hmm. And they don't have that kind of group now. And so it does make that really tough to work out.
It's essentially what the Royals did last year, basically what the Detroit Tigers did for kind of a few years in that kind of 08 to 2012 range. And, you know, they came close. Tigers got to the World Series in 2012, but they couldn't make it pay, and now they're kind of suffering from all those things. They just don't have enough pieces to make it work. They're going to kind of have to rebuild at some point, I think. But so, you know, to your point of flags fly forever, the Royals made that run, and they completed it. They got the whole championship. So totally worth it. I think the Tigers would take where they are now if they would have won in 2012. And, yeah, you know, it's so definitely, like, I'm on the same page with you. Don't regret at all what it was last year, but it definitely, the price looks much more steep given where they are now. And, you know, the results are for tonight's game, as we're recording this, are not looking so hot right now.
Oh, wonderful. I turned it off.
They're losing 4-0. So yeah, well, there's that. Wait, is it 4 or is it 5? It might be 5-0.
It's probably 5. Probably 6 now.
It might be 7. Can I get a 7?
7. It's 7. 8. 8 to the man in the Orioles hat in the front row.
Well, in classic, just for in classic Royals fashion for this current skid they're on, Volquez only gave up one hit through 4 1/3 innings pitched, and then of course didn't get another out and gave up 4 runs. That's just like classic, the way the Royals are going right now. So, you know, it's unfortunate, but I also don't know where they're going to get the help from. And, you know, it's, the Zimmer thing is so disappointing, because for the last 3 years, I mean, 2014, opening day, I don't think there was much anticipation or hope that he would be ready then, but there was some hope that he could be ready by the end of the season if they needed a little push at the end of the year. And then 2015, there was definitely an opening day possibility, certainly by May, June or whatever. And then, of course, the injuries came back again. Yep. And so then it's, but now we're on to 2016, and he could be an opening day in the rotation, opening day, and then injuries and setbacks and everything else. And, man, I mean, with as talented as he is, and, you know, he's pitched well, it's just he hasn't pitched that much because he can't stay healthy. So, I mean, as talented as he is, he'd look really nice right now if he was just blowing guys away in Omaha, knocking on the door to the majors. You'd be like, man, bring him up. Let's get this thing rolling. And then maybe he does what Ventura did in 2014, you know, and kind of stabilizes things. But without him, and then without Almonte, and I mean, they just don't have anything. And, no, you know, I mean, the best pitcher they've got is probably Matt Strom in Double-A. He's not ready. Nope. I mean, I don't think they have anybody else that you consider.
Alec Mills has been good, but we saw him get rocked, and that's a jump from Double-A to the majors. I didn't think about either of these guys, but they do have Mike Minor and Chris Medlin on the DL.
Right.
Though Minor's not been good in his rehab stints. If that's something where, hey, he's just working on getting this feel or that pitch down or whatever, that's one thing, but he's still getting hit. Medlin was not good the last couple starts and last few appearances when he was healthy. And so, you know, I'm not sure what to expect from him when he comes back. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you can really say that we are relying on those guys. I think it's more along the lines of their arms, and, you know, maybe they'll be able to do something. But, you know, you can't sit there and say, well, wait till Mike Minor comes up.
Yeah, exactly.
If that's your savior, that's a difficult position to be in.
You got some problems. And let me ask you this. Did you ever think we'd be in a situation where not even halfway through 2016, we'd be saying, man, sure would be nice to have Jason Vargas back.
It would. I mean,
How much better would things look, right? I mean, maybe he would be having a horrible season too. I don't know. But things would feel a lot better right now if you had Jason Vargas.
He is as milquetoast of a pitcher as you can find.
Yes.
And yet, if you can give six innings and allow only three runs every time out, which is about what he did, you can live with that. I mean, that fits the Royals formula. And, you know, right now that they're not getting that from just about anybody. Kennedy most of the time, but his last start kind of fell apart at the end too. So it's just, I mean, nothing's going right now. I can't fathom how this team was just scorching hot for six games against Cleveland and against Tampa, and then immediately turn around and are just incapable of doing anything. Like, they're not playing well at all. They're playing like mid-2000s Royals right now. Yeah. After playing like the Blue Jays from last July or from like last August in the week before. You know, they're just like, it's literally a tale of two teams. It's night and day, black and white, yin and yang. You know, it's complete opposites, and it's kind of startling and scary how just quickly it turned. It's not like a gradual diminishment of performance. It's just like,
yeah,
they're done.
Gone. Like,
it's, you know, boom, you know, clock struck midnight. And all that goodwill and magic is gone now. I just don't. It's really weird to see it happen, and I don't have many explanations for it as to why it happened that way. It's just out of nowhere.
Well,
they just stopped playing.
You know, we've talked about previously how, you know, there's been a lot of, over the last couple of years, there's been a lot of like, oh, that moment. You know, specifically talking about the Jose Reyes error in the Blue Jays game in 2014, where after that the Royals went on this huge run and then rode it straight to the World Series, you know. And then we talked about, oh, maybe, you know, Kendrys Morales hits that walk-off home run against the Braves, and then next thing you know, they win 15-20. And we were talking about maybe that was the moment. Maybe that was the moment this year where things turned and they finally got back again. But it feels almost like that Infante error was a kind of reverse one of those moments for the Royals, where now instead of having a moment, everything going the Royals' way, now that happened and everything is going against the Royals, and it's like, oh crap, what do we do? So I mean, they gotta have to snap out of it somehow, and it's got to be more than just Volquez having a good game or Kennedy having a good game. You know, they've got to string a few of these things together, and they've got to wake up the offense. And I mean, I don't know where it's coming from, because, you know, the Hosmer and Kane are doing about as well as you can expect either of them to do. They're kind of carrying this team, even though they're the only two players that are really doing anything offensively. But everyone else, with the exception of Kendrys Morales, is kind of who they are.
Yeah.
So in terms of, you know, outside of injecting something, an external force to make it better, there is no pun intended. There is
I mean, that would work.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take it.
By the time these guys get caught, they might not be Royals anymore.
Hey, they might be two-time defending world champion Royals.
Right.
Who knows? But so I mean, it really, Kendrys Morales is the only kind of expectation you could have to them getting better offensively, and then a return of Alex Gordon. But to be honest with you, I'm more or less writing off, if not the entire season for Alex Gordon, but then the majority of it, because hand and wrist injuries for hitters is just, it's just something you don't want to mess with. And the idea that Gordon can come back and be the exact same player, I think is woefully not where you want to be in terms of what your hopes are for this team. I think Alex Gordon is going to have a very slow, very difficult climb to get his swing back, just because not necessarily his swing, but just his effectiveness of his swing, because you just have no power from those types of injuries. It just all gets sapped and it takes a long time to come back. And then and I actually heard Will Carroll, I believe his name is, the injury expert on Twitter. Mm-hmm. He was on 610 and he mentioned kind of a similar thing. He said it takes a while to get the power back, but then once it does, it just kind of flips on like a switch. And you know, that's historically what they've seen with injuries like what Alex Gordon has, and just wrist injuries in general. So I don't have too much faith that Alex Gordon can come back right away and inject some life. I mean, Alex Gordon he's proven a lot of people, including myself, wrong, but some things I think even he doesn't have the power to overcome.
Yeah. I mean, if it takes him another 3 weeks to start to get back, like to actually be back in the big leagues, and then maybe another, I don't know, 3 weeks to get going again. I mean, you're looking at, it's middle of July.
Yeah.
That leaves, you know, you're hoping then maybe 2.5 months of sustained production, which you can't guarantee. And, you know, if it is some kind of a struggle, or if his struggles from early in the year continue, then yeah, you get Alex Gordon back and I think he would help, but it's, you know, no guarantee that, you know, he's going to be this all-star caliber guy, you know, because long layoff, got to get your timing back, got to get strength in the hand and wrists back and all of that. And I don't know. It's tough. Cause I keep saying it's tough. Why do I keep using that word? It is tough. So
it is.
You got, you know, Cuthbert, who seems to be about where he's going to be. Whit Merrifield's still playing well and is going to play second base for the time being. And I think he'll be fine, but you know, you're not going to get power from him. He's going to be setting.
You're not
going to
get more than what you're getting from him.
Right. Exactly. And you know, the other guys, Dyson, Orlando, Fuentes, you know, there's maybe a little bit of upside, but nothing you can reasonably rely on, and nothing that you can say they're going to jump out. They're going to break out right now, and that's going to lead them. I mean, you might get what Orlando got, where he had a 14-game hitting streak, but he's just as cold as everybody else right now, and it's it makes it really hard to see where the improvement's going to come from, unless Hosmer, Kane, Perez, if they continue to just rip it up, which would help. And you know, if the guys ahead of them can just be merely okay or average, that can go a long way. But it's not there, and. You know, as long as the pitching's really bad, it doesn't matter. They're not going to be a team that scores 6-7 runs a night to keep up with what the pitchers are allowing right now. So that's it's both sides of the coin. It's just struggles all around.
Yeah, truly is unfortunate. I mean, we had last week. Man, we were so excited. They were 30-22. They were back in first place. Everything was looking fantastic. They just swept the White Sox, who were in first place previously, and it was looking like they were back on track. We could be maybe having another fun October, but right now, I don't see it. I think the way this team is going, and maybe it's a little bit too reactionary, but you know, let's see. What would they be if you after the first since they started that 3-11 stretch? Yeah, they won 15 of 20, but see, they've been 18 and 22. So, you know, I mean, that's okay, I guess. And
yeah, I guess, but then it's like,
but if you extrapolate that over a full season, because that's 40 games, so times four, what are you, you're at a 72-90 record. I mean, that's literally the 2012 Royals. So, yeah. You know, I'm at this point, the way they're playing, you'd be happy to win 80, 85 games somewhere in there. And in this division, the one positive, we can end on this note. The one positive would be no one's running away with this thing. Obviously, Cleveland just swept the Royals in a 4-game series, so they had they have a lead now that looks good. But you know, the Royals just did something similar by sweeping the White Sox right before that. So the Right now, Cleveland is at 32-25, leading the division. Detroit and the Royals are at 30-28, 2.5 games back. And the White Sox are at 29-29. They're 3.5 games back. So, you know, nobody's running away with this thing. Nobody's Chicago right now at 40-17, and nobody's going to be that team. So if they can just kind of hang around a little bit and maybe win some series or a game against divisional opponents like Cleveland, then they can stick in this thing and maybe they can get healthy at the end of the season and make a run and take it home. And I mean, it's not a stretch to say 85 wins could take this division this year. I mean, it would have taken it last year by 2 games, no less. So, you know, it's certainly possible the Royals could be 10 games worse and still win the division, but they've still got to get to that 85 wins. I don't know that I see it right now. I mean, I think my projection on Baseball Perspective on BP Kansas City was 92-70 for the season. Like, what was your prediction?
I don't remember. We were all at 90 or above though.
Yeah.
I mean, we were all really, really bullish. I don't know. I mean, right now it feels like you've lost Moustakas and Gordon. You've got basically rookies in their place, and you know, not to say that they're not going to be good players or that they can't fill in. We were talking about it last week that yeah, they're playing well, but you know, there is something to that longer view of, hey, you know, a guy is usually going to level out to what he should be or what his skill level is, and you know, the hot streaks may be there still, and there may be another hot streak for Cuthbert and another really hot streak for Merrifield. Arguably he's still in it, but it's certainly not like where he was getting 2 hits every night. So I think they can still do that. I think Orlando can still get hot, you know, at another point. And if Ibner comes back, he could get hot. But generally those guys are going to level off to what they, you know, what their actual skill level is, which is, you know, maybe average big league players, role players, Ibner, fourth outfielder, Merrifield, utility guy, occasional starter. And then you hope that maybe the upside adds up enough and they can actually string some hits, some runs, some wins together. But God, right now, the way the pitching is in disarray, the way that the offense is shown that they can just fall apart for long stretches, you know, it's tough to say that they're going to get into that 90 win range right now. They would have to go through one of those just super hot stretches, like in, you know, right after the All-Star break, or, you know, late in July in 2014, where they just go crazy and win like 9 in a row and lose a game and win 7. And then, you know, just that's what they need to do. And they probably need to do, you know, more of those, like, you know, 5-game win streaks, lose one, win, you know, just chunks.
Yep.
Just keep getting chunks,
because they've already lost 10.
Yeah, they've lost 5 games in a row twice this year. They didn't even do that once last year. So I think you can't even look at mid-90s. I think 90 is absolute high, and that's going to require a lot of help and a lot of improvement, you know. So I don't know, it's kind of depressing to be so upbeat about them last week and this week just be like, I don't know if they're going to win again. I mean, they will, but I don't know until it's, they do.
And the other kind of extraneous things that are out there, we've talked before about how if you're Dayton Moore, it's tough because you've got to manage this season, but also have that eye, have one eye kind of looking towards the future. And when you think about a couple things going against that, you mentioned the runs they've had in the second half of the season last couple of years. Does that instill a little bit of false hope in this organization that, hey, let's just hang around? You know, they were 48-50 in 2014, and they ended up, you know, we all know what happened there, going to the World Series. So, you know, maybe we can do that again. Is there a little false hope there? Because this team is not that 2014 team. So, you know, who knows in that regard. And then you've got to say, well, you know, is it worth it to stick through this year and then get healthy and make a run next year in 2017, the, you know, quote unquote final year of this window? Or then, you know, is it worth it to say, man, this has shown how depleted we really are. Maybe we need to trade a piece or two in order to get some back. And then, you know, not only maybe have a little bit extra for next year, but then looking forward past 2017 to stay competitive in 2018, 2019. I mean, that's a tough balance right now, and these are the really tough situations because, I mean, despite as negative as we are, they still have a winning record, still 30-28. So it's, man, I don't envy anyone in the Rose organization right now. It's a tough.
It's a really awkward position because, yeah, it's like you said, you want to play for this year. You feel like the division isn't out of reach, that maybe a little bit of improvement gets you back on top and you can maybe carry it off. And you've still got next year to look at, where you don't want to sell off guys this year because you do think that you'll have the same group next year, pretty much the same group that won a World Series in 2015 and that you felt good about this year, and not much has changed. So there's you know, still that kind of hope that, okay, well, this is our last year, we're going to keep going for it. You know, I don't know. It's a really weird spot to be in because they have to see, you know, how far they can go with this group. But at the same time, you know, if they do get to a position where they don't see it working out this year, you know, I don't know if you just ride it out or if you do try to retain some extra value and maybe extend the window and maybe repiece. It's really strange. And I my hunch is they will stand pat. They will try to add and not necessarily sell anybody off, just because, you know, I think they've got that taste of winning. They want to stick with it, and they certainly don't want to break it up if next year still has potential, which it should, you know, with everybody healthy and, and, you know, most of the guys back and maybe opportunity for up and coming players and whatnot. So that's, you know, I don't think they do anything this year, but, you know, no. It depends on how it ends and depends on where things look in the off season. And if the market changes, it may be something where, hey, somebody wants to give you three top 10 prospects and something for Eric Hosmer. Well, you got to listen to that. If you feel like maybe you can make it up somewhere else with maybe an average first baseman or a fill in or what have you. So, same boat. I don't envy them those decisions at all.
Yeah. So, and just interesting little side note, I pulled up because I was curious, the 1985 Royals, because I remember they weren't necessarily setting the world on fire in the early. I don't remember, but I remember hearing people talk about how they weren't. And in June 14th of 1985 season, exactly 58 games through the season, that team was also 30-28. So a little interesting little tidbit there. Don't want to contribute to any of the false hope narrative again, but that's just the cut. I was just curious and thought that I would share. So,
If they can, you know, do the same thing, that'd be cool.
I'd appreciate that.
I just don't know. This team, this is baseball.
Yep. I mean,
it is cruel.
It is cruel. It is a cruel mistress. So I think that's all the Royals talk we'll have. But Mike, you've got a little bit of an exciting weekend coming up, don't you?
Yeah, we've got the Pitch Talks event that we talked about over the last couple weeks, and there was one slight change to the lineup. It was originally going to have Jeff Passan from Yahoo Sports as one of the members of these panels. You know, just to recap, it's at the Negro League Baseball Museum. It'll be on Friday, June 10th. So this episode's probably posting on Thursday the 9th. So that's tomorrow for this event. You go to homestandsports.com and use the promo code BPRO, B-P-R-O, all lowercase. You'll save $5. It'll be a $20 ticket to get you in the door. You will get 3 hours of baseball discussion that includes a blogger panel of myself and Darren Watson from BP Kansas City, plus Max Reaper and Mindahas Kuhlman from Royals Review, who they're both good people. This will be hosted by Danny Parkins and Carrington Harrison from 610. There's also going to be a discussion with Sam Mellinger and Jonah Carey. They will be talking with a replacement for Passan, and he is the one and only Royals legend, Amos Otis.
Hey-o.
Royals Royals Hall of Famer, I believe part of the inaugural class. I never got to watch him. He was kind of done by the time I was cognizant of what baseball was. So I know a lot of people like Craig Brown and Darren's really excited. They got to watch him in you know, kind of their slightly younger days than me. And so they, you know, they're excited to know that he's going to be there. So that's going to be one part. Arturo Marcano from ESPN Deportes is going to have a presentation about the Negro Leagues. And then the main event is Jonah Carey talking with Andre Dawson and Tim Raines. So it's $20. It's going to be starting. Doors are at 7. Scheduled to last till about 10. There's possibly a reception at the end of it. But, you know, the $20 is going to go to the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. All proceeds are going to the museum. And the purchase of a ticket will also include a one-year membership to the museum. So, I mean, you're getting, you know, if you go to the museum once, it's $10 if you're not a member. So, you know, really, just on that alone, it's completely worth it if you have your Friday night free. There's a Q&A session, so you can ask the bloggers what our favorite Pop-Tarts are if you want to. You know,
and you will be very impressed by Darren's answer, I promise on that.
Absolutely.
One.
I was surprised, frankly. I was a little bit shocked and taken aback, but when I thought about it, it made sense.
It does.
Really did. So that's going on. You know, we also, just to transition from that event, we also have a lot of stuff we want to hand out to you guys from Kelly's Westport Inn. They are gracious sponsors of us for years and years now. So if you want to get a Kelly's gift certificate, so a drink on us, basically, just send us an email. Send us a weird baseball question. Send us a standard baseball question. You know, a couple weeks ago, we were talking about, you know, what would you do if you could play in a baseball game for your team and you had to play the whole game. And Jeff's question was, what if you knew a guy who was going to get one hit per game, but only one hit? How would you use him? Ask us something like that. If you ask us something and we use your question on the air, we'll send you a gift certificate and give you a night out on us to Kelly's Westport Inn.
And even if we don't use your question, we still might send you one.
We still might. Yeah. You never know. We've got a lot of goodwill to spread in that regard. Please be 21 and over, and preferably in the Kansas City area. But if you're coming to KC, it's a good place to go. So send that, any of those emails, to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com. Yeah, I think those are my two pitches for the week.
There you go.
Neither of which hit anybody in the ribs, and neither of which were hit for home runs.
Yes, so you're already doing better than the majority of the Royals pitching staff.
Yes.
And there it is. So we'll leave on that note. So absolutely check out the Pitch Talks event at the Negro League Baseball Museum this weekend. It's going to be a fantastic event. Michael, of course, Michael and Darren representing BP Kansas City proudly. Be sure to check that out and support the Negro League Baseball Museum because it's an awesome place. And Bob Kendrick is awesome, and he's been on the show, and he really has, and you can hear it when he's on the show. He's got a passion and appreciation of history that you don't see from a lot of people, and it shows not only when he comes on the show, but in the museum itself. So definitely worth taking a trip down there. Absolutely need to go. And send all the positive vibes, mojo, whatever you possibly can to the Royals and their pitching staff. They're in need of some positivity. I'm hoping that next week's show will be not nearly as somber as this one, and that the Royals will have won a game by then, because it doesn't look like that trend will be stopping tonight. So I don't know. We need some Royals magic, some Royals anything right now. So with that, we'll leave you. And I hope this has heard you well wherever you are. And thank you so much for listening. We can never say it enough. If you have any questions or anything, as Mike said, go ahead and send them on over. You might get a Kelly's gift certificate. But thanks for stopping in. We'll hope to see you next week. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.
Hi, this is Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. Summertime is here, and that means one thing. Your neighbor's cat sneaks over and craps in your garden. No, of course, I'm just joking. Summer also means my neighbor borrowing your boat trailer and driving it into Smithville Lake, or mosquitoes, or your three-year-old drinking the air conditioner water. Haha, I guess what I'm saying here is that summer means different things to different people. And for 65 years, Kelly's Westport Inn has been a vacation for those summer problems ever since Randall Kelly poured his first frosty draft in 1947. 102 degrees and 99% humidity? Don't worry, Kelly's is air conditioned, and the drinks are as cold as ice. And when the heat breaks, Randall's Rooftop is ready for you to kick back, where you can head downstairs for some of the best live music in town. Summer is different things to different people, but to everyone in Kansas City, Kelly's Westport is your summertime bar. I'm Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll leave the taps on for you.